many times have you thought, I would love to do this or that? Maybe write a book, start a charity, create a kids' puppet show, build a sustainable clubhouse, go on the trip of a lifetime, create a production company. Whatever that thing is for you, I hope this podcast inspires you to believe you can. I'm Karen Vaughan, and this is the Get Off the Bench podcast. Howdy, and welcome back to another week of the Get Off the Bench podcast. Here's a big question for you. How often do you get distracted? For me, I try not to, but it does happen. And actually, let's be real about this. Everybody gets distracted. But are there ways to manage it? Yes, there are. Today, I'm talking to Nir Eyal about his book, which is Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. It's a fantastic episode. So he's got so many tips and tricks all the way through it. But talk about distraction. I have to share this with you and be honest. Well, today, our septic tank blew up, and it's right outside my office window right here. And so we've got plumbers coming and going. The whole time I'm talking to Nir about how not to be distracted, I'm distracted by the dog barking, the plumber outside the window talking on his phone, banging with a shovel, and God knows what. And I can't believe the irony of doing an interview with someone about not being distracted, and the whole bloody time I'm trying to stay focused because of all these external distractions. What's fantastic about this is that Nir talks about what we can do about this kind of stuff. So I'm going to get straight into it. So welcome, Nir.
Thank you so much. Great to be here with you.
Oh, fantastic. I've been waiting for this for so long. Now, let me just get this right. So you are a million copy seller of your book, Indistractable. I nearly said Indestructible, but I think they're both the same, actually, sometimes. And your other book, Hooked. And you have been featured on Harvard Business Review, New York Times, Time Magazine, Psychology Today, and a whole stack of other stuff. And you worked with some of the biggest companies in the world. And you talk about how do we stay focused and how do we not get distracted? But I want to start with one big question just to get the ball rolling. Do you get distracted?
Yes, I do. In fact, so this term, indistractable, is a term I made up. And when you make up a new word, you get to define it any way you want. So being indistractable doesn't mean you never get distracted. I still get distracted from time to time. The difference is between a distractible person and an indistractable person is that an indistractable person knows why they got distracted so that it doesn't keep happening again and again. There's a wonderful quote by Paulo Coelho who said that a mistake repeated more than once is a decision. A mistake repeated more than once is a decision. It's such a great quote. So I do get distracted, but when it happens, if it's a new distraction, I'll say, okay, I see what you did there to me, distraction, right? It happened one time, but I'm not going to let it happen again and again. How many times can we complain about email or Facebook or the news or Twitter or whatever, our boss, our kids, whatever, distracting us before we do something about it? So an indistractable person understands, okay, why did it happen? And there's only three causes for a distraction. Once you understand the cause of the distraction, you can take steps today to prevent getting distracted tomorrow. So that's the difference. A distractible person keeps getting distracted again and again and again.
So what are the three causes then? Why do we do it? Because for me, this is how I'm thinking. If we know we shouldn't be doing it, or we know we should be doing something else, or we keep complaining, oh, Facebook, oh, emails, we still do it. So what's stopping us from getting over the line?
Yeah. So this is what took me 5 years to write because I kept getting distracted. I wrote the book for me more than anyone else. I needed this book in my life because I kept getting distracted by all these, great things that are that potentially can distract us. They're wonderful. It's great to live in an age with so much wonderful technology and so many entertaining options to spend our time doing. But if you don't stay focused on your priorities and your values, you will look back in your life in regret. And that's what I didn't want to happen to me. I wanted to make sure that I lived my life according to my values and according to my schedule, not someone else's. So it's important to realize that this is not a new problem. That people tend to think that it's our devices, it's the modern world these days, right? And that's not true. We know that Plato, the Greek philosopher, talked about this very problem of distraction 2,500 years ago. So if Plato was talking about this, he called it in the Greek akrasia, the tendency to do things against our better interests. So if Plato was complaining about this problem 2,500 years ago, it can't be caused by the internet and social media. It's got to be something inside the human condition.
Yeah.
So just giving tips and tricks and life hacks that take care of the technology problem, it's just the tip of the iceberg. That really we need to go much, much deeper into the human psychology of why, despite knowing what to do, we don't do it. Mm. Because that is really the scourge of the modern age, right? We live in this age of abundance, yeah, where we have so many good things, right? This is the first time in human history where we have more calories to feed every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth. This is the, yep, first generation in humankind that doesn't struggle with famine. You know, famine was part of the human condition always somewhere on the planet for the past 200,000 years, at least.
Yeah.
So this is the first time in human history. So what do we get? You know, technology, the Green Revolution gave us an abundance of calories, right? Now we can feed everybody, but now we have new problems. Now we have the diseases of excess.
Yep.
So this is the first time in human history where more people die of diseases of excess, like obesity and diabetes, than die of starvation. That's, yep, never happened before.
No.
So it's important to realize that technology doesn't solve problems. Technology gives us better problems. Okay. Yeah. So as Paul Virilio said, when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck.
Yeah.
So every new technology, we have to start there. Every new technology, every gift comes with a cost. Every good comes with a bad.
Yeah.
And so realizing that these technologies are wonderful, they are incredible tools. And so we need to stop vilifying and moralizing and medicalizing them and realizing that we just need some new tactics and mindsets around how to use these tools so that they don't use us.
Mm.
Starting with understanding what is the root cause of the problem.
Yep.
Okay, what is really distraction?
Yep.
So if you ask most people what is the opposite of distraction, they'll tell you the opposite of distraction is focus.
Yep.
But that's not exactly right. The opposite of distraction is not focus. The opposite of distraction, if you look at the origin of the word, the opposite of distraction is traction.
Mm.
Of course it is. Think about it. Traction and distraction, they're opposites.
Yep.
So what's interesting is that both these words come from the same Latin root, trahare, which means to pull. And they both end in the same six letters, A-C-T-I-O-N, that spells action.
Yep.
So distraction is not something that happens to us. It is an action that we ourselves take. So traction, by definition, is any action that pulls you towards what you said you were going to do. Things that move you closer to your values and help you become the kind of person you want to become. Those are acts of traction.
Yep.
The opposite of traction, distraction, is any action that pulls you away from what you plan to do, further away from your values, further away from becoming the person you want to become. So this is super, super important. And it's really, we have to fundamentally understand the difference between traction and distraction if we're going to become indistractable,
yep,
in that any action that you plan to take is fine. There's nothing wrong with going on social media or watching Netflix or doing whatever it is you want to do, as long as you do it with intent. Okay, as Dorothy Parker said, the time you plan to waste is not wasted time. So if it's in your calendar, do it, enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with going on social media.
Yay.
If that's what you want to do, why is social media somehow more evil or morally inferior to watching sports on TV? No difference, as long as that's what you plan to do in advance. Now, conversely, just because something is a work-related task doesn't mean it's not a distraction. So for example, for me, I would sit down at my desk day after day, and I would open up my to-do list. And by the way, we can talk about why to-do lists, yep, are one of the worst things you can do for your personal productivity. We can get back to that later.
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, I've got that big important task I've been meaning to do, that thing at the top of my to-do list. I'm going to get started. Nothing's going to get in my way. I'm not going to get distracted. Here I go. But first, let me check some email.
Yep.
Right? And then yeah, 20, 30, 45 minutes later, you're still checking email, yeah, as opposed to doing the things you were said you were going to do.
Yeah.
Well, what's so bad about that? In fact, I would argue that is the most dangerous form of distraction because you don't even realize you're off track.
Yeah.
So just because something is a work-related task doesn't mean it's not a distraction. That's the most dangerous kind of distraction, because if it's not what you said you were going to do in advance, it's as much of a distraction as playing Candy Crush or some other frivolity.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now to answer your question, we've got traction, we've got distraction. Now we have to ask ourselves, what prompts us to take these actions? Well, we've got two kinds of triggers. We've got external triggers and we've got internal triggers.
Yeah.
External triggers are these pings, dings, and rings, anything in our outside environment,
yeah,
that can lead us towards traction or distraction. So you, we can take care of these pings, dings, and rings. That's pretty easy. It's not a very complicated thing to do. There's a couple pages of it in my book. I think that the deeper questions are, what about the external triggers that come with our kids or our boss or our pets or needless meetings we didn't need to attend, emails that are just nothing more than distractions? All of these external triggers are very easily dealt with if we know how. Mm. But the cold, hard truth is that they only account for 10% of our distractions. When we do time studies with participants in these studies, we know that only 10% of the time they get distracted, is it because of a ping, ding, or ring? So what's the other 90%?
Wow.
The other 90% of the time that you get distracted, it's not because of something outside of you. It's not because of an external trigger. Again, there's only account for 10%. 90% of the time you get distracted, it's because of what's happening inside of you. Mm. Okay, what's happening inside your head.
Yep.
These are what we call internal triggers. Internal triggers are uncomfortable emotional states that we seek to escape.
Mm.
Boredom, loneliness, fatigue, anxiety, stress, uncertainty. This is the root cause. Back to your question of, well, why do we keep getting distracted if we know what to do?
Yep.
It's because we don't know how to deal with discomfort.
Mm.
You see, distraction is a symptom of dysfunction, whether it's in a corporate enterprise, whether it's in a family, or whether it's an individual. Mm. It's about not understanding how to deal with pain. Mm. And so what most people do when they experience discomfort is that they try and escape it, right? They drink it away. They smoke it away. They gossip it away. They click it away. They look for something to take their mind off of that discomfort.
Mm.
What high performers do is that they lean into that discomfort. They use it as rocket fuel to propel them towards traction, whereas what most people do, distractible people, try and escape it with distraction. So fundamentally, to answer your question, sorry, it was a long-winded
That's all
way.
Right. But I That's good.
Fundamentally, distraction is a symptom of the inability to deal with discomfort. So the first step, so now that I've kind of laid out the map, the first step is to master these internal triggers or they will become our master.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter what the distraction is, whether it's too much news, too much booze, too much football, too much Facebook, it doesn't matter. You're always going to find a distraction unless you know the root cause of the emotion causing you to look for escape. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't help check your phone at the dinner table every night when you're with your family, if you can't sit through a meeting without looking at your device, it's not the device.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's something else going on inside of you that you need a healthier way to deal with than looking for distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's step number one. We have to master these internal triggers.
Yeah.
Step number two is making time for traction. Step number three is hacking back the external triggers. And then finally, preventing distraction with PACT. So it's through these four steps. This is how anyone can become indistractable.
Yeah. And does that work for everybody? Those four steps work for everybody?
Well, I would say short of some kind of pathology, right? Yeah. So perhaps someone who has, you know, clinical OCD, someone who's dealing with a severe drug addiction, perhaps. Maybe those are circumstances on the edge cases that people might need, you know, heavier duty help from a clinician.
Yeah.
But for the vast majority of people, I would include people with ADHD as well in that category, even people with ADHD, you know, I meet a lot more people who think they have ADHD and who have never actually properly been diagnosed, but they think, oh, I must have undiagnosed ADHD.
Yeah.
Well, even if you do, we always want to start with skills before pills.
Yeah.
You see, many people jump to the pill thinking, oh, that'll be the solution.
Mm.
But, you know, first of all, you know, every pharmaceutical has side effects, which can be dangerous and unnecessary. So the first step we have to take is first teach ourselves the skills to deal with distraction, to deal with our inability to focus. And if that skill provides relief, right, if we can live a better life doing what we say we're going to do, well, then why wouldn't we do that as the very first step? So yes, short of a real severe pathology, yes, anyone can do it.
Mm. So I'm thinking about that, and I totally get that. I'm thinking about that first step, right? Master internal triggers. And you just said before about the cause, what's sitting below the emotion that you're trying to avoid. So we've sort of got a few levels down that we're looking at. So I was thinking before I got on here, I was thinking, God, I was doing this a couple of days ago. I was farting around. I couldn't believe it, you know, and I'm like, Karen, knuckle down, get that bloody thing done. And I was doing everything, washing, you name it. And then I thought about this interview. I thought, now if Nir asked me, what have I been doing this lately? I'm like, oh shit, I have actually. And I thought about my emotions and what was happening. And it was about planning a workshop, and it was something that I haven't ran this particular workshop before, but it's still just pulling all my stuff together, and you know, you're putting it into a presentable basket. But here's the emotions that I could identify. There's probably more. Frustration. I was really frustrated about getting it done, but also because the organization who's asked me to do it made changes, do you know, and I was frustrated. That's not what you said in the first place, do you know, and so I just couldn't let it go. I was just cranky about it, right? And then overwhelm. I was really overwhelmed. It's like, well, which bits do I put in, you know, what do I start with? And you know what the other one was? Self-doubt. It was kind of like,
that's a big one.
It is a big one. And while I know my job, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm very experienced, not podcast, my other work. And it was like, why am I doubting myself? What am I scared that I'm not going to deliver? You know? And so that comes back to your next level. What's under here that's causing these emotions? I haven't got to that bit yet. I don't, there's obviously fear of something, but how do you like... I know you say your four steps are work for anyone who hasn't got a pathological disorder or something like that, but I see that first step is it makes sense, it sounds simple, but if you just have to identify the emotion, that's okay. We can go, oh, I'm really frustrated, I'm really upset, I'm really angry, I feel betrayed, blah, 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 blah. But when you start to get to that next level, is there a process that you teach or that you talk about in your book that takes you through layers to
absolutely. Yeah. So I was just identifying the what, right? What is going on? I didn't tell you what to do about it.
Yeah.
So the book actually has over a dozen different steps that you can take to deal with these internal triggers. So the idea is to have an arrow in your quiver, a tool in your toolbox, ready to go, that when you identify, okay, what's going on here, right? I want people to be able to say to themselves, I'm not getting distracted because that thing that distracted me is actually important, which it almost never is, right? Like, let me, you know, before I get started, I really need to clean up my desk, or I really should finish that chapter in this book, or I really should take out the trash, or, you know, we'll find a million things to do. that we think we're being productive. We got to do it at some point anyway. Let me just check email or whatever the case might be. And we don't realize that those are also distractions.
Yeah.
So the reason I emphasize these internal triggers so much is because it's only when you understand that the reason you're not doing what you said you were going to do, as you've already taken this step, is because of this feeling, not because of an objective fact that distraction needs to get done right now. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's because of a subjective perception that we have made up, that our brain has tricked us into believing, I got to check email, I got to take out the trash, I got to do the dishes right now, when really what I'm trying to do is to avoid the thing I really know I need to do, right?
Yeah.
So it's really, really important to first emphasize that the cause of distraction is always an escape from discomfort. Okay, so now that you've done that, what do you do? How do you deal with that discomfort in a healthier way? So there's many, many, many strategies. There's about over a dozen different strategies that you can use right away. Some of those involve reimagining the task, reimagining the trigger, and reimagining your temperament. There's like they file into like little subsections and chapters. I'll tell you a technique that I use almost every day. One of my favorite techniques is called the 10-minute rule.
Yep.
The 10-minute rule says, and I didn't invent this. This comes from acceptance and commitment therapy. It's been around for decades.
Yep.
The way it works is this. So for me, I've been a professional writer now for well over a decade. And every time I write, it is a slog. It is hard freaking work, right? And all I want to do while I'm writing is something else, right? I would love to go check the news or watch a YouTube video or look at email. I don't know, anything but the writing, because writing's hard and it never gets easier.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I started using, and I've been doing this for years now, is this 10-minute rule. And the 10-minute rule says that you can give in to any distraction Okay, whether it's checking email when you're supposed to be writing your blog post, in my case, whether it's eating that piece of chocolate cake that you're trying to avoid if you're on a diet, whether it's smoking that cigarette if you're trying to quit, you can give in, no problem. You can give in to that distraction, but not right now.
Yeah.
In 10 minutes. And if 10 minutes is too long, no problem. Make it 2 minutes. Okay, that's fine. Doesn't matter. The idea here is that you will have a practice whereby you set a clock. And you say, okay, I'm just going to continue to work on this task for 10 minutes, whatever your rule is. Mine's 10-minute rule. And then I can give into that distraction.
Yeah.
Now, for those 10 minutes, you have a choice to make. You can either get back to the task at hand, or you can do what's called surfing the urge. Surfing the urge acknowledges that these uncomfortable sensations, the sensations that you were talking about earlier, overwhelm, fatigue, frustration, boredom, uncertainty, all of these very icky, sticky, uncomfortable emotions, in the moment, they seem like they will always be there. And so our brain wants to take the path of least resistance, okay? One way to relieve that discomfort is doing the work.
Yep.
The other way to relieve the discomfort is escaping the work, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can show yourself that over time, these sensations will naturally subside.
Yep.
When you feel overwhelmed, you don't feel overwhelmed forever. When you feel angry, when you feel bored, when you feel lonesome, that doesn't stick around forever. Mm. And yet somehow when we're in the moment, we are absolutely convinced that it will not go away unless we do something.
Yep.
And many times the answer is to not do anything.
Yep.
All right. There's that phrase, don't just do something, sit there.
Yep. Yep.
Which kind of flips the normal saying on its head.
Yep.
Right. Sometimes the answer is don't do anything.
Yep.
That the fact is, emotions are like waves.
Mm.
And so if you can ride these internal triggers like a surfer on a surfboard, okay, so what do I do? So I'll set an alarm for 10 minutes. I'll put my phone down. I'll take a deep breath and I'll say, and for me, my technique to surf the urge is a mantra. I have a personal mantra. You can steal my mantra. You can make up your own. This is my personal mantra. When something, you know, when all I want to do is get distracted in that 10-minute rule, I set a clock for 10 minutes and I close my eyes for a quick minute and I say to myself, this is what it feels like to get better. This is what it feels like to get better. I just say that in my head just a few times, okay? Until I feel like I have surfed that urge and I'm ready to get back at work. And what you will find that 9 times out of 10, when you just take that momentary pause, and that takes me maybe 20, 30 seconds, by the time those 10 minutes are up, I don't want to get distracted. I want to keep working on what I'm working.
Yeah.
And the most important thing is that you are teaching yourself that you have agency, that you have efficacy, that these distractions, these internal triggers don't have control over you because you said, hey, look, I said I was going to focus for 10 minutes and just do the task or surf the urge. It's the only two choices I had. Those only two paths I could take.
Yep.
And look, I did it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what happens is the 10-minute rule becomes the 12-minute rule, becomes the 15-minute rule, becomes the 20-minute rule. And over time, you're proving to yourself, hey, I can do this. I'm not a slave to these uncomfortable sensations. So that's just one technique out of dozens.
Yeah. And it's always harder to get started, isn't it? It's that, you know, I like that setting that 10 minutes because you take away the pain of I'm going to sit here forever. But it's, if you can start, it's kind of like writing. It is kind of like doing anything. It's, and don't get me wrong, I'm not always this bad. It's just, if it's a big thing,
we all are. But, hey, you're preaching to the choir here. Well, this is why I wrote this book. I needed this for myself. It was a personal, but I want to emphasize, so which specific technique you use within each strategy is up to you, but you have to do all four strategies.
Yep.
Meaning you have to first and foremost have a technique ready to go. Okay. So for internal triggers, maybe it's a 10-minute rule. There's all kinds of other techniques you can use. You got to have at least one ready in that strategy.
Yep.
Then number two, make time for traction. Okay.
Yep.
If you have the emotional regulation strategy, but you don't have the time on your calendar, it's not going to work. Step number three, the third strategy, hacking back the external trigger. Okay, if you have an emotion regulation strategy and you have time on your calendar, but your kids and your dog and your boss and everybody's interrupting you, all these external triggers, and your phone's on and it's pinging and dinging you, also won't work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you need the fourth strategy, the fourth step that you have to have at least one practice in that strategy in place is to prevent distraction with pacts, which is where you have some kind of firewall against distraction. So it doesn't matter exactly which tactic you use. What I don't want listeners to think is, oh, it's all about this one secret magic bullet. No. There are four magic bullets. Yeah. Okay. Master internal triggers, make time for traction, hack back external triggers, and prevent distraction with packs. You have to do one small thing in each of these strategies, and then you will be indistractable.
So is that like one thing in each of these per task, or one thing each of these, like the practice
whenever
daily?
You want to be indistractable, yeah, right? Okay. So if you're retired or a child, you probably don't need this stuff, yeah. Right? Yeah. But if you find, hey, yeah, exactly. But if you're finding that, you know I'm possible, I know I'm capable of more,
yeah,
but it's not happening. I know what I need to do, like you were saying before, but it doesn't happen. I don't want to do it right now. So
yeah.
I find a million other things to do. For those type of things, you know, for the time that you want to spend to be indistractable, you've got to have all these four strategies. And this is what took me 5 years to write, because I really went down to the first principles around distraction. And what I found was a lot of tips, tricks, and life hacks, and no deeper psychology as to why it happens in the first place. Right. Yeah. So we were just monkey see, monkey do, right? Like, oh, 2 minute rule, or the to-do list, or grayscale your phone, or all these kind of, disparate techniques, and nothing can connect them together. And what connects them together in my mind now that I see the model and then I can't unsee it is these four steps of the indistractable model that I just mentioned.
So when you say it took you 5 years to write, what were you working on that was so important to you that you were like, ah, oh, man, I cannot get distracted anymore. I've got to get this damn thing. What was it that you were so hell-bent to do that you decided to then go down this big rabbit hole and explore how not to be distracted?
So the real seminal moment for me where I decided, hey, I have to figure this out is was a time when I sat down with my daughter. And we had a beautiful day planned, just some quality daddy-daughter time. And I remember we had this activity book of different things that dads and daughters could do together. And one of the activities in the book, there's all kinds of games, do a Sudoku puzzle or have a paper airplane throwing contest. But I remember one of the activities in the book was to ask each other this question. If you could have any superpower, what superpower would you want? And I remember that question verbatim, but I can't tell you what my daughter said. Because in that moment, I don't even remember why, I thought it was a good idea to just, let me just check my phone real quick, honey. Let me just look at this one thing. And by the time I looked back at, looked up from my device, my daughter was gone. Because I was sending a very clear message that whatever was on my phone was more important than she was. And so that's when I really had to reassess my own relationship with distraction. And if I'm honest with you, it didn't just happen with my daughter. It would happen when I would say, oh, today's going to be the day I exercise and eat right. But I didn't, and I wouldn't. Or, oh, today's going to be the day that I focus on that big project and I'm not going to get distracted. Nothing's going to get in my way. And yet somehow 20, 30, 45 minutes later, I was doing everything but the big important work project that I said I was going to do. So that was really the tipping point where I said, okay, enough's enough. I've got to figure this out for myself. Unfortunately, what I did, I read every book on the topic that I could find, and they all kind of said the same thing, right? Stop using technology so much. Get off Facebook. Discipline your way into it.
Yep.
And that stuff didn't help. It wasn't the real source of the problem.
Yeah.
And so that's why I and this happens all the time, by the way. Whenever I have a problem in my life, I'll ask my wife about it. We'll talk about it. I'll ask some friends about it. I'll read a bunch of books about it. And only then, if I feel like, wow, none of those things have actually helped, okay, now I take it upon myself to really go into the academic literature and figure it out from first principles myself.
I've been in that situation many times too, and I feel such guilt, when I think, geez, I didn't even listen to the answer, and it's awful. When you, back into step one, like when you get the emotion, then you go, what's under it? That's kind of doing like a lot of self-work, that's that really hard stuff to go, it's really deep and it can be really painful. And of course, we're going to avoid it if we don't actually realize that it's going to help us grow. When you were doing that and discovering it, did you notice shifts in your relationships? That it was getting better because you were doing the work on yourself?
So I think there's, when we look into our internal triggers, there's basically only two things we can do. We can either fix the source of the problem, Okay, so if we have a continually bubbling internal trigger, and this typically happens with a difficult home life situation or an oppressive workplace culture, right? So in those type of situations where we can solve the problem, we should. So this is why I'm not an advocate for meditating your problems away, right? Yeah. Meditating your problems away is not going to happen. Yeah. Meditating your problems away only happens for problems you cannot change. Yeah. Sometimes the right answer is to get off your butt and fix the problem, right? Maybe change professions, maybe look for a different employer, maybe have a difficult conversation with your partner. Where the problem can be fixed, we absolutely should try and fix the problem. But sometimes part of being a grown-up, we can't fix every problem, right? Mm-hmm. We shouldn't always think that just because I feel bad, something needs to change. Sometimes I need to change. Sometimes my perception of that discomfort needs to change.
Yeah.
Right. That Buddhist saying that pain is universal, but suffering is optional.
Yeah.
So part of being a grown-up is accepting discomfort. There's just that ennui of life that not everything is peachy keen all the time. But that doesn't necessarily. Yeah. Right. I want my money back.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's not that you have to change everything. It's only the things that you can change. And of course, the things that we can't change, we have to just accept them as such. But either way, when we can't change the source of the problem, we need to have tactics ready to go. We need to have practices, these tools in our toolkit, so that when we can't change the source of the discomfort, we know what to do about it in a healthy way rather than a harmful way.
Yeah. I want to come to time, get to time blocking in a minute, because you mentioned that and the to-do list. But do you think that getting traction, so I won't say focus, but getting traction, do you think that the degree that we are not distracted and getting traction, do you think that is relevant to the degree that we are interested or that we find value in the thing that we're doing? Did that question make sense? It was a bit.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think this is actually, so there's a few concepts I think floating around in personal productivity and self-help. And one of them, kind of this question reminds me of the concept of flow.
Yeah.
Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi was a famous psychologist who did this work around flow, and I would put it in the same category of habits. Yeah. That it's nice work if you can get it, right? What we say about being an actor in Hollywood, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
If you can get into flow, if you can turn something into a habit, you put it on autopilot and it just happens.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. The problem is, very few behaviors can become flow.
Yep.
Like when Csikszentmihalyi did this research on flow, he was interviewing people who were doing fun things. They were playing basketball. They were painting. They were doing pastimes. Right? Like some of them were professionals, but they weren't doing their taxes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's where we struggle. Where we struggle is where we're doing a behavior that is inherently uncomfortable. Yep. Right? It's difficult freaking work.
Yep.
And that's why we look for distraction doing something else.
Yep.
Right? So in that respect, you know, if something is enjoyable and you love it, you're not going to get distracted. But what happens to the things that we have to do to move our lives and career forward that aren't so fun? Mm-hmm. Right? I would argue almost everything worth having in life is on the other side of discomfort.
Yeah.
Whether it's having a close relationship. Yeah, it's fun for a while. You've got that honeymoon phase. Yep. But long-term relationships take hard work and a lot of tears and a lot of effort and a lot of conversations that sometimes are uncomfortable, yep. Right? That's how you stay married to somebody for a lifetime. It's not, you know, honeymoon the entire way. Mm-hmm. Starting a business. Yeah, it's fun and exciting when you're designing the logo and you're telling your friends that you're an entrepreneur, but the grind is where you actually succeed. It's day after day after day of hard work. Health and fitness. Right? You think it's easy to have a healthy body? No, it's every day making good choices. Mm-hmm. So it's really about consistency over intensity. I think our society, we love, you know, get rich quick type solutions, right? Just give me the secret, give me the pill, give me the formula.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can do that, right? So intensity, right? I'll make a New Year's resolution and I'll do that for all of 2 weeks. And then that's it. I won't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's really this philosophy of mine is around that things worth having take time and they take consistent forward progress, relentless, consistent forward progress. Yeah. That's really how we accomplish our long-term goals.
Which is why a lot of people don't succeed, because we're always chasing the quick fix, the happy fix. This makes me feel good. It gives me instant gratification. I'm just going to do this. We know that the hard work has a reward, but that's just way too long. That takes me way too long. It hurts too much. So I'll avoid it. When you're talking about,
but to me the optimistic perspective is that when you realize it's just pain. Yep. It's just discomfort,
yep.
Right? It's not some kind of existential crisis. It's not that there's a huge barrier in your way. The vast majority of things that we need to do, we know what to do, right? Who doesn't know that to get in shape, you have to eat right and exercise? Yep. Do we really need a diet book to tell us that? We know, right? <Yep. laughs> If you want to do well in your business, you got to do the hard work that other people don't want to do. We know that. If you want to have a great relationship, you have to be fully present with people. Yep. We all know what to do.
Yeah.
The problem is not that we don't know what to do. And if you don't know what to do, Google it, right? Yep. All the information's out there.
Yeah.
The problem is that we don't know how to stop getting in our own way. We don't know how to stop getting distracted. So that's why I think this is the most important skill of the century, because the world is only going to become a more distracting place, right? So if you think the world is distracting now, just wait a few years with virtual reality, augmented reality, and everything that's happening in reality. Not only do we need to become indistractable, it is essential that we teach our kids how to become indistractable, because again, the world is only going to become a more distracting place.
Well, I know you talk about phones and that's not the fault of the phones, but I've got two young adults in this house, 18 and 20, and their phones just go nonstop. And they just walk around carrying this bloody phone. And you talk to them, you say, put the phone down for a minute. I can do two things at once. And then they're like, what? Sorry? And it's bad. But when talking before about we know what to do, but we don't do it. I've got this real curiosity about why we don't want, like, we're our own limits. I'm trying to word this right. It's kind of like the only thing in our way is us, you know, and we're the only ones putting our limit on ourselves. What can you imagine a world, like in your mind, in your imagination, can you imagine a world where we are all living to our potential? Do you know that we haven't put these, because when you're saying all these things that we're feeling, it just, they're not the truth. They're perceptions that we have, do you know, and all that. If we could just go, you know what? I know they're perceptions. They're absolutely not real. I am such a bigger person, a greater person, with limitless person without all these false beliefs. What would become of the world if we did that?
I think we could live without regret. I think that's my goal. My goal is not that everyone becomes a superhero and super fit and everyone's a millionaire, because not everybody needs or wants that.
Yeah.
Right. I think the most important thing, there's only one thing that everybody wants. And that is truly deeply to look back on your life and say that you spent it the way you wanted to, right? No matter what, you can't control the things that happen to us in life, right? People get sick unexpectedly. There are financial difficulties. Things happen to us. I'm not claiming we control absolutely everything in our life.
Yeah.
But I think we want to look back in our life and say, we handle that situation the way that we don't regret, right? And I think one of the things that you can do to minimize regret is to ensure that you spent your time and your attention the way you want, as opposed to the way someone else wanted to, right? One of the regrets of the dying that we've all heard, you know, seen these articles of what type of things do people regret? It's almost always about how people spent their time.
Yeah.
Right. I wish I would have spent less time in the office and more time with my kids. Mm-hmm. Right. I wish I would have had the courage to start a business. I wish I would, you know, all these things that people look back and regret. To me, that's terrifying to look back in my life and say, why was I on Facebook so much? Right? Like, why was I dealing with frivolity when I really could have done something meaningful?
Yeah,
that's what I want to prevent. And by the way, it's not up to me to tell people how to spend their time. If what's meaningful to you and according to your values is being a professional video game player, awesome, right? Yeah. That's great. Do it. If you want to meditate, go on walks, watch TV, it doesn't matter what you want to do. What I want to help you do is to do what it is that you say you want to do in advance, as opposed to, ugh, life is tough right now.
Yeah.
Let me find a way to escape it.
Yeah.
Whether it's by drinking too much, smoking too much, clicking too much, scrolling too much, These are all mechanisms of escape that when we look back on our life, we regret.
Yeah. When you talk about values, what's your definition of values? Like what do you think about that?
So values are super important, particularly when it comes to this second strategy of making time for traction. The way we do that is that we turn our values into time. Mm. Turn our values into time. Because there's only, if you really want to know what someone's values are, you don't ask them. You don't ask them because people don't tell you the truth. No one will. You look at two things. You look at how they spend their money and how they spend their time. That's how you figure out what someone's values really are. So what are values? My definition of values are attributes of the person you want to become. Mm. Attributes of the person you want to become. So your goal in becoming indistractable is to ask yourself, how would the person I want to become spend their time?
Mm.
And so what you're going to do, you're not going to like have a big vision board and a five-year plan. That stuff doesn't work. What you want to do instead is ask yourself, how do I want to spend my time tomorrow?
Yep.
How would the person I want to become spend their time? And so what you're going to do is you're going to look at these three life domains. Okay. The first life domain is you. You're at the center of these three life domains. If you can't take care of yourself, can't take care of other people, you can't make the world a better place.
Yep.
So ask yourself, how would the person I want to become take care of themselves? Right? How much time would you spend reading, meditating, praying, self-care, working out? Not that any of these things need to be important to you, but if they are important to you, put a place for them on your calendar, which should include fun things too, right? If the person you want to become plays video games and watches Netflix and goes on social media, no problem. Great.
Yeah.
Put it on your schedule.
Yep.
Okay. So that's the you domain. Yep. The next life domain is your relationships.
Yep.
Far too many of our relationships, whether it's our friendships, whether it's our spouses, whether it's our kids, whether it's our parents, our siblings, we give them whatever scraps of time are left over.
Mm, yeah.
Right? After all the other things happen in our life, here you go. Here's 30 minutes here. Here's an hour there if you're lucky. Stop that. They deserve better.
Yeah.
So if people are important to you in your life, put time on your calendar for them, especially the ones that are closest to you, but also your friends. You know, in the industrialized world, we have a loneliness epidemic.
Yeah.
Because people are not making time for their friends like they used to. Our previous generations, our parents, our grandparents, they had the church group, they had the bowling league, they had the Kiwanis Club, they had these groups that frequently forced people to get together on a regular cadence, on a regular schedule.
Yeah.
We need to bring that back. That is, you know, loneliness is such a huge problem. And it's happening because people don't reserve time for their friends. They just, oh, it'll happen one day.
Yeah.
But you know, we know that friendships typically are not killed. You don't kill a friendship. That's pretty rare that there's a big blowout and you say, oh, I'm never going to talk to that person again.
Yeah.
Most of the time, almost always, relationships aren't killed. They starve to death.
Mm.
Meaning, oh, it's been so long and we haven't talked. And if we were really good friends, we probably would have talked by now. But now it's been 6 months and it's kind of awkward. So it's okay. I won't call them.
Yep.
And we lose our friends this way. It's terrible. It's a real disaster. Put time in your schedule for your most important relationships.
Yep.
And then finally, work. Now, work is how most people, if they schedule their day, they usually start with this life domain. I think it's actually the last one.
Yep.
And work can be divided into two categories. We have what we call reflective work and we have reactive work. Mm. Reactive work is reacting to emails, reacting to notifications, reacting to emails, constantly reacting to things. And that's part of everybody's job. I get it. Everybody has some portion of their day that's spent doing reactive work.
Mm.
The problem is, if all day long, all you do is reactive work, you have no time for reflective work.
Yeah.
Reflective work is the kind of work that can only be done without distraction. Mm. Planning, strategizing, thinking, for God's sakes, can only be done without distraction. So whether it's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe an hour, you have to put that time in your schedule for reflective work. Because if you don't, you're going to run real fast in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So schedule that time with yourself and keep that time sacred. It's incredibly important. So this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of how we turn our values into time.
And you've just reminded me, and I've got another guilty pang. I did that for a while. I started doing that, you know, putting in blocks of like, well, Monday morning, I'm only going to sit down and just plan, you know, and stuff like that. And I had forgotten, until you mention it now, I had forgotten that somehow, somewhere along the line, I've completely drifted out of that out of that pattern.
Because, and I'll tell you how, I tell you why that happened is because you did, you probably did two steps, right? Step one, master the internal triggers. Maybe you had some strategies to deal with the discomfort.
Yeah.
Step two, you plan the time. That's great. Kudos for you.
Yeah.
Step three, I'm not sure if you did or not, which is removing the external triggers. Maybe there was somebody who came in the room and distracted you. Maybe there was something on your phone that distracted you. So you have to hack back the external triggers. And most importantly, step four, prevent distraction with pacts. So let me ask you, if I say, okay, what was the thing that you said you wanted to do? You wanted to make sure that you sat down and you spent time planning?
Yep.
Okay, and it didn't happen. Now, I would ask you, if I said, if you don't sit down and spend this hour planning, you're going to have to pay me $10,000.
Yeah, I'll plan.
You're going to plan, right? Yeah. So we're not debating whether you can or cannot. We have established you can.
Yeah.
We're just negotiating the price.
Yeah.
So when people tell me all the time, people say, oh, you know, my cell phone is so addictive and I can't stop using it. Or my kids, they're always on their device. They won't stop looking at their phones. Or I can't, I have to be constantly on call at my office. There's no way. My clients always expect me. It's impossible. I can't.
Yep.
I said, okay, well, let's test this.
Yep.
If I said, here's $10,000, could you? Oh, yeah. I guess I could. Good night. Right? So we've established you can. We're just negotiating the price. And so that's what a pact is all about. And there's several kinds of pacts, an effort pact, a price pact, an identity pact, where you're making a firewall against distraction, right? And it's amazing because if you think about it, if, I don't know, one of your heroes said, hey, I would really love to have lunch with you. You know, I don't know, who one of your personal heroes, maybe it's a, who's a personal hero?
Jane Goodall.
Jane Goodall. Yeah. Jane Goodall calls you up and says, hey, I would love to have lunch with you.
I'm going.
You're going, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be there. And not only that, you're going to make sure you're there a half an hour early just in case of traffic.
Yep. Yes.
So when it's someone
2 days
else,
early.
Right, right. So when it's someone else who is important,
yeah,
we drop everything.
Yeah.
We're going to make time for them. But when it's time for the most important person in the world, you're the most important person in your world.
Yep.
So taking care of your needs, whether it's exercise, whether it's planning time to think, whether it's meditating or prayer, somehow all of these things that we're doing for ourselves, it's like, you know, who cares? Jane Goodall is just another person. She's not more important to you for your world. And yet somehow we don't keep that time sacred for ourselves.
No, we don't. I don't do exercise in the morning. We always go for a walk with the dogs. We always ride our bikes. We always dance. You know, like there's all those.
Beautiful.
We do those things every single morning. And it's, but I've got to tell you though, and we know that if we do them, we're going to have a better day. And we know that we feel better. And we know that we're less grumpy. But every single morning, we're like, oh God. We've got to go for a walk. Oh, God, I just want a coffee, you know. And every single morning we complain about it. But once we do it, we feel fantastic. And I don't know what that trigger is that you would ever go instead of complaining. And I know it's just narrative. And I know our narratives make a big damn difference. If we shut up,
so true.
We wouldn't hear them and then we wouldn't believe them.
We've kind of come full circle here back to the internal triggers. And so this the technique I'm about to share is about reimagining the trigger.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a very personal anecdote. So for one of the things you don't want, if you're a professional speaker and author like I am, you do not want to get stage fright.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not a helpful trait.
Yeah.
And yet every time I get on stage for my entire public speaking career, my armpits get sweaty. My heart starts pounding in my chest. My throat gets dry. In fact, just describing it to you right now, I get those symptoms right now, right? I feel, and all I want to do is like try and escape it, right? Okay, this interview's over. I don't want to feel this anymore. All right, let me get out of here.
Yeah.
But, and before I would go on stage, you know, I had a very important message that I want to get out there. And I was very motivated to share this message.
Yeah.
But I kept telling myself this script that I shouldn't be experiencing this.
Yeah.
Right? That this discomfort is something that I didn't want to feel. Because if I was a professional speaker, I wouldn't feel this way. And now this is going to make me mess up. And now I'm getting nervous. And all these bad things are going to happen. And I started catastrophizing because of these physiological symptoms.
Yeah.
So what I had to do when I started, you know, researching this technique I had to reimagine the trigger. I had to change the narrative, as you said. Yeah. So now I still feel the same exact physiological responses. Yeah. I still get the sweaty armpits. I still get my heart rate bumping. I still get the dry throat. I still feel those physiological symptoms. But now the narrative has changed. The interpretation, yeah. I have reimagined those internal triggers. So now when I'm about to get on stage and I can feel my heart pumping, I say to myself, you see, this is my heart pumping.
Yep.
More oxygen to my brain so I can deliver my best possible talk.
Oh, that's good.
Right? Yep. And so the symptoms haven't changed. Remember, there's a big difference. Yep. Most people don't know the difference between an emotion and a feeling.
Yeah.
We use those words what's the word I'm looking for? Interchangeably. Right?
Yeah.
And they're not. They're different. An emotion is a physiological reaction. You do not control your emotions.
Yep.
What you control is your feeling. Your feeling is a psychological response to a physiological reaction.
Yep. Yep.
So that is up to us. We can't change our emotions. Yep. If you feel lonesome or indecisive or stressed or anxious or tense, you don't control that. Once you even recognize it, it's too late. You've already felt it.
Yep.
So you don't control the physiological reaction.
Yep.
What you control is the psychological interpretation.
Yep.
So as opposed to saying, oh, I don't want to get on stage because of all this catastrophizing, I change the narrative. And the same with you. Yep. You know you need to do it.
Yep.
So I would invite you to consider, what is an alternative narrative to, oh, I don't feel like it. This stinks. This feeling is crappy. Maybe it's, something like what I say. And again, you should customize for yourself.
Yep.
I feel this every single day, right? Myself as well. This is what it feels like to get better.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
This is what it feels like to live to my values. Or I don't have to do this. I get to do this.
Yeah.
Right. Or anything. And you have to do this for yourself. Whatever, when someone else tends to tell you what to think, it tends to come off as cheesy. And I recognize that. But if you can spend a few minutes thinking, what would resonate with you? What would actually what would change your mindset around this internal trigger so that every time you feel that sensation, it sparks an appreciation of that physiological reaction. In fact, we see this with high performers. High performers in every field, whether it's athletics, whether it's the arts, whether it's business, they feel the same exact internal triggers that we do. They also feel bored and indecisive and stressed and uncertain. They feel the exact same way.
Mm.
The difference is they use those internal triggers as rocket fuel to propel them towards traction, whereas most people escape it with distraction.
Yeah. And when you're saying it, I do actually do that. Like I do start every morning with, and then as we're getting the dogs, we're putting their harnesses on, and all that kind of stuff. I keep saying, well, you know what? At least our legs work. Like this is good because I'm really grateful that we get this time in the morning. So we do shift the narrative. I'm not saying we continue the narrative, but we do start with it every morning. And I keep saying to my partner, why do we do this? Do this because it's just bloody making it harder. Like it's but we do shift it around, and as we're walking, we're like, this is beautiful. We're so lucky. We live out of town, we live on a farm, and we're away from everything. We've got the most beautiful sunrises, and it's so we do shift it, but we don't start with the shift. We have to make the effort to make the shift, and it's bloody hard. It
can be, but it does become part of your culture. Like if you can find a person who we know optimism is kind of annoying in other people, but it's highly protective, right? We know that optimists live longer, they have more friends, they make more money, they contribute more to the community. We have what's called a negativity bias. All people have a negativity bias. We see the harm, the bad stuff. It's much more salient than the good stuff. So a huge antidote to this is gratitude. Like the more times, like we have this silly family mantra that every time something good happens in our lives, we always repeat out loud, everything good happens to us.
Yep.
We just say that. Good. Everything good happens to us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We know that's not true. Right.
Yeah.
But there's something about that reminder of, holy crap, like we get to breathe right now. Like we're not dead. Right. We could be in pain. We could have hardship.
Yeah.
We could be in a fight. All kinds of things can be happening.
Yeah.
But at least we're not dead.
Agree.
So gratitude is an amazing antidote. And not just, I'm going to have a gratitude journal, because that's very heavy lifting. But the constant repetition of recognizing the awe of how unbelievably lucky we are to be sentient beings on a tiny speck of dust in a universe filled with vacuum blackness, right? Like how improbable it is that we would even have this conversation right now is mind-blowing. So I'm getting goosebumps actually even thinking about it right now. So the more we can refocus ourselves into how everything we get to do is a privilege. Like gratitude is an amazing antiseptic to these internal triggers.
I agree. And I was just thinking before too, when you said about, I've just released a gratitude journal actually, and you're going, oh, gratitude journal, that's heavy lifting.
No. Oh, it's great. I wasn't disparaging it. It's great. If you do it.
that is exactly right. And I find myself, I find it hard to do. I find it, hard to do.
I would say in addition to, right, like repeating these little mantras, these little family sayings, these little like quirky, funny things, or even just personal reminders in your head that refocus your mind to be gracious and to provide gratitude, the more the better. I don't think you can do it enough.
No, I don't think you can either. And I think it's some people use the word gratitude, and that gets a little bit overused it. I think, it's kind of fucking gratitude, here we go again. But I think if we say, in mine it's got, what are three things I love? Three things, great things that happened today, three things I did for others, three things I did for myself. Do you know? And it was so it's a little bit different to just that, because people go, oh, I don't know what to say. Every day I'm saying the same thing. It's my family, my dog, my food, But I love the gratitude. I love appreciation. Just appreciate what's around you. And because we don't have a perfect world, when nothing is perfect, we're all going to have sad days. We're all going to have bad days. There are going to be people that interfere with us. Life's not bloody perfect, but if only we can say, look out the window, because I'm just looking at right now and go, beautiful fruit trees just sitting out there. How lucky am I? There's a guy out there working on my septic system as we speak. So that's not such a good thing because it's bugging.
It's getting better. I think another source that I think perhaps is overlooked a lot of times these days is organized religion. I think a lot of people are secular these days and they have trouble believing in the supernatural. I would count myself in that category. Yeah. But I've gained a greater appreciation for the wisdom of ritual in organized religion. And so many times, what I'll do is hear a prayer or hear, religion in a way forces you to give thanks many times. And sometimes that can be meaningless, and I understand why people don't identify with it. But there's also nothing wrong to saying something for the sake of saying something without necessarily thinking I have to believe everything, right? So I think that might not be a bad source of if you're grasping for what do I say, sometimes just continuing a tradition may not be a bad idea either.
Well, I love that, and I'm really strong on Hinduism and Buddhism, the Buddhists say, if you can't help someone, don't harm them. And that's something that is constantly in my head. If you can't help someone, don't harm them. But also there's a couple of other mantras. Om Mani Padme Hum is another one, which is like all being together, just a gratitude thing. And I love it. I listen to a Ganesha mantra every morning, and that's about removing obstacles, and sometimes I don't even know. It's kind of like driving your car. Sometimes I get somewhere and I don't even remember driving it. And sometimes I'm listening to a mantra and it's like, oh, it's finished. I don't actually remember listening to it, subconsciously it must be doing something, into our mind.
And you can also adapt these things, if you hear something from that somebody else has said or a religious text, there's no rule that says people have a monopoly on that stuff, that you have to say it the way they said it. I like to mix it up every once in a while. Like we have some things that we say as a family many, many times that it's kind of, become part of our family culture and tradition. But for you, if you say something enough times and now you're not really feeling it anymore, there's no rule that says you can't change that thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, 100%. So I just want to tell you one more question, because I have loved this conversation, but you're talking about let's let's become indistractable. Let's take our life back. Clearly, we know that there are benefits to taking our life back. And we spend our whole life avoiding and gaining. Like, that's just in everything we do. Why is it that we want our lives to be better? We know they can be better, but we don't, like, I know I'm not going to say the same as what we've already talked about, but we set ourselves up to believe that change is going to be painful. Like, we just do that. Do you know, it's like we're already I know, but it's just going to be painful. Why do we do that? You might not have the answer to that, but it fascinates me that we don't even try, because we go, that's painful.
Well, that's a big part of it. So I think there's a whole, I could give you a dissertation on to why we do that, but I'll jump to the conclusion, which I think what most people want to know is, like, well, what do I do about that? We've all been in that situation. Yeah. I think the solution is to plan your time, not the output.
Yeah.
Right. So we get so, and this is part of the reasons why, by the way, we didn't talk about to-do lists. This is part of the reason I hate to-do lists.
Yeah.
Because to-do lists are just a register of output.
Yeah.
All the things I want to have done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you want output, you need input.
Yeah.
Well, as knowledge workers, what is our input? Our input is only two things, our time and our attention.
Mm.
But where is that on your to-do list?
Yeah.
Where do you budget the input? So people have this list of a million things they want to have done on their to-do list, and no input for where to do it. So that's why doing a time box calendar, by having that in your calendar and not assessing yourself by how many cute boxes you checked off, that is the wrong metric.
Yep.
The right metric is, did I work on, or did I do what I said I was going to do for as long as I said I would without distraction?
Yep.
That's it. That's it. It can be 10 minutes, right? But did I do what I said I was going to do for as long as I said I would without distraction? Not did I finish. Not did I finish.
Yeah.
It's only about, did I do it without distraction? Because it turns out the people who use the to-do list method, and I'm not saying it's bad to get things out of your head and put them on a piece of paper. That's great.
Yeah.
The problem is when people say, okay, what am I supposed to do? Oh, task number one on my to-do list. Let me get started on that. Okay, here I go. I get started. 5 minutes later, oh, let me just check that email. Or, oh, I got that tap on the shoulder from my colleague. Or, oh, did you see what happened in the news? Yep. And then, wait, what was I working on again?
Yeah.
As opposed to the person who time boxes and says, I'm only going to do this one thing and nothing else. Now you know how long things take.
Yep.
You say, okay, I need to finish a slide presentation. That slide presentation needs to be 10 slides long. And I finished two slides. Okay, great. Well, then I need five more time boxes just like that in order to finish the entire project, right?
Yeah,
you can't get that with a to-do list. You can only get that with a time box. So I would say the answer to these big goals is to start not even with the smallest task, because that oftentimes people can't get their head around. Start with the time, right? I'm just going to work on this for 15 minutes.
Yep.
That's it. You do anything for 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
That actually, and it, of course, as you start doing it, now you start getting progress around how long is this task going to actually take me, right? How far did I get in those 15 minutes? And also, when you, nothing motivates progress like progress.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So as opposed to this big, incredible, big goal with this huge outcome, start with the time, not the output.
And so should you, with you talking about time boxing, if you put a 10 minute time box or 15 minutes, whatever, to do something, and then you go, oh, now I'm really enjoying this and I'm getting some traction, but then you've got something else straight after. Should you move it? Like, is that a bad thing to do?
Never. In the day, you never, ever move it. Okay. I don't care how much you're enjoying it. If you said, stop, I'm going to work on something else, you must stop and work on something else, whatever it was that was on your schedule. Now, for tomorrow, fair game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tomorrow you could say, I'm going to put in buffer time.
Yeah,
that's totally fine, right? But if you said, hey, I'm going to work on this for 15 minutes and then I need to make a phone call, you can't say, oh, I'm having so much fun, sorry, phone call for later, and vice versa. If I'm having a really good phone call, but then I said, I have to take my time for myself, you can't let that phone call run over. You have another meeting.
Yeah.
What you can do is to say, look, I want the option value. So you can put in buffer time. And you say, well, what's the point? The point is, I want you to know what is traction and what is distraction for every minute of your day. You can't say you got distracted unless you know what it distracted you from.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you plan that time. Even if you have buffer time, that's fine. Because what it forces you to do is to say, how am I spending my time in accordance with my values, right? Where is the time for myself? Where is the time for my friends? Where is the time for my family? Where is the time for the work? It has to be in your schedule, because if it's not in your schedule, you're going to look back in regret.
Well, I love what you're saying, because I put buffers in. I never, ever, ever do two meetings back to back. It's just, I absolutely refuse, because I'm not going to get that whole shitty feeling that, you know, whatever. I put a buffer in between every meeting, and that is for, I take notes, I go to the toilet, and I make a cup of tea, and they're valuable to me. And
so, terrific. That's exactly the right way to do it. I applaud you. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I love my buffers. Nir, I have absolutely loved this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this wisdom. I have not got your book, and now I'm feeling guilty again. Listen, I'm going to get rid of this guilt, but I'm going to go and get it.
No problem. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and it was a pleasure being on the show. And if anybody's interested in more information, my website is nirandfar.com, spelled N-I-R, like my first name, nirandfar.com. And the book is called Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life.
Thank you. And you've also got your other book, Hooked, as well. So people should go and look for both. Thank you so very much for joining me. And I'll put all that in the show notes. And I thank you. This has been absolutely magnificent. All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
See ya. Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Bye-bye. Oh, guys, that was absolutely fantastic. I'm going to go and get Nir's book, and I can't believe I haven't got it already, but I need to go and pull my finger out, stop feeling guilty, and go get that book. You should too. I'm not telling you how to spend your time, but, you know, it might be good. Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. And I am going to tell you what to do, because dead set, we all get distracted and it drives us nuts. And if this book can actually stop us from doing all those time-wasting things, and like Nir says, you know, if you want to watch TV, go for your life. But you know that we all know those things that we regret losing the time for during our day. So I reckon go get the book. If you want to have a check Nir out and follow him, it's Nir and Far, so N-I-R and F-A-R. com. And those four steps: master internal triggers, make time for traction, hack back external triggers, and prevent distraction with packs. I reckon this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. I'm not going to keep talking, because that will just undo everything Nir said. What a great episode. Go follow him. And thank you for joining me again this week. And I'll see you next week. See ya. Thanks for joining me. I hope this episode inspired you to take action. If you'd like to reach out, then I'd love to hear from you. info@getoffthebench.com.au, and check out my website, kerenvaughan.com. Otherwise, keep believing in yourself, celebrate the tiny wins, and keep moving in the right direction.